AI is everywhere, and especially in learning and development. Every learning tech solution says they're powered by AI, but are they really? Does AI solve all your worries, or does it just create more problems? On the all-new Learning Uncovered podcast, we'll cut through that noise, exploring the truth about AI in the corporate learning world. We'll look at the real pros and cons and how you can actually use AI to make an impact in your business. So get ready to uncover what really matters. I'm Tom Pope, and welcome to this all-new podcast, Learning Uncovered. Hello and welcome to episode 3 of L&D Uncovered. I'm your host, Tom Pope. This festive special is all about reflection and looking ahead. We're taking a moment to unpack what 2025 really taught us and what trends actually stuck and what quietly disappeared, and that we're turning our eyes to what's coming in 2026 and beyond. I'm joined by our expert Jampan panel, who'll be sharing honest perspectives on the year that's been and the challenges still facing corporate learning, and what you might want to start preparing for as we head towards 2026. So grab a coffee or something a bit festively stronger, and let's uncover what the future of L&D really looks like.
Hi, I'm Beth Cooper. I'm the Marketing Director at Jampan.
Hi, I'm Louise Richardson, and I'm the Head of Technology Solutions at Jampan.
Hello, John O'Neill, Commercial Director at Jampan. Nice to be with you all.
Hello, I'm Diogo Cruz, and I'm the Talent Success Manager at Jampan.
Hi, Damien DeBarra, Head of Learning Solutions at Jampan, and Merry Christmas.
Okay, so let's start off with the first of the five questions. The first one is the year that was L&D in 2025. So what one thing in L&D that really worked well in 2025? Should we start with you, Damien?
Sure. So I'm going to break the rules immediately and say there's two things I've seen which I really liked this year in e-learning courseware specifically. The first of which is a greater use of social API within e-learning courses. So rather than getting a correct or incorrect answer on a question, instead I'm getting an answer that says, good job, and 75% of people agree or disagree with you. So I really like that. It brings a kind of multiplayer feel to e-learning courses, which is really welcome. And the second thing, although this is a bit low tech, it's very effective, which is the increasing insertion of experts into courses. So let's say you've just answered that question I talked about. Then I get a little mini audio or video file below that from a real person. So it's meet Beth. She works at the business. Beth's going to explain to you for 2 minutes what you might have done differently in this scenario. If you've got some money and some time, do it as a video. If you don't, just record some simple audio on your phone and put that in. And it kind of mitigates against that feeling of it's a machine talking to me. So it's an increased, you know, human-powered learning design and increased reality in courseware.
Thanks, Damien. Does anybody else have any views in terms of things that they've thought of really worked well in 2025?
I mean, I would echo what Damien said about the social API. I think it's a very interesting space. It's opening up a world where people communicate much more actively. And the key thing I've seen this year that I've been excited by is the loss of one tooling system for good delivery. So the blends that commercial approaches to capturing knowledge and capturing information are very much heading into the world of L&D, whether L&D likes it or not. So it's very interesting to see much more commercial tools for capturing information, sharing information, becoming the norm within ecosystems. And that social API piece plays into that really nicely. It's democratization of learning without the permission of perhaps the big vendors. The big vendors are evolving very quickly to include it. I won't name any because we've got lots of friends in lots of spaces, but there's some excellent headless designs out there that are emerging into people's ecosystems and are beginning to change things very actively. So that change arc that L&D is experiencing is super exciting to me.
Thanks, John. Really good stuff there. Has anyone got anything else they want to add in terms of stuff that they've seen this year?
Yeah, I think just building on what John touched on there about, you know, creation of learning as well. I think AI is a buzzword and it's here to stay, I think. But that is something that I've seen a lot of enhancements on from a platform perspective in terms of helping administrators and L&D teams to more quickly create their structure of learning. So where we're moving to, you know, different types of blend, it's also a lot easier to actually pull that together in the platform with the help of AI. So things like automatically populating like titles and descriptions, things like that. It just takes away some of that manual legwork that the teams are used to having. And it means that you can, you know, create stuff and get it on platform a lot quicker as well.
Thanks, Louise. So some lots of good stuff there in terms of what we've seen in 2025 across our various areas. Let's talk about things that we should probably leave behind and never speak of again. Anything out there that we think that we just want to leave and put in the bin?
So my over the last 2 or 3 months, we've had exploratory conversations with clients about what their next 2 and 3 years look like and kind of trying to understand where they've come from and where they want to go. And one of the sentiments I've seen shift in the last few months is a distinct irritation and impatience with off-the-shelf, ready-made library content for ethics and compliance or mandatory learning. So your classic workplace behavior, cybercrime, data security training, which we all love. And what I've noticed a few clients saying to me is, why should I be paying very serious amounts of money for content that's coming off a shelf that gets top and tailed, and I stick my logo in, and then I'm charged per user? And clients are saying to us, in a world of AI where I can input learning outcomes, input scenarios into an LLM, and pretty quickly generate a script out, then get that script checked by a legal expert in my business, why should I pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for content like that when it could potentially generate it myself? Now, it isn't quite as simple as that, as we all know, but I wonder if the days of the large mandatory training vendors pushing 6-hour long learner journeys of generic content towards learners to tick a box, I wonder if that might be coming to an end. It's a sentiment I've heard a few times over the last few months. So I think that's one to watch and one which I would quite happily see left behind. I think there's better ways of approaching those needs.
Yeah, I think for me, a big one would be algorithms and the promise that, you know, the system triggering recommendations for learners is the bread and butter and the be all and end all. Because I think one of the biggest challenges that I've seen a lot of clients face over the last year or so is that move towards more of a learning experience type lens in an organization that predominantly has mainly push learning, so mainly compliance or role-based learning. So then there's not really anything on there for an algorithm to push or kind of, you know, promote to their learners. And I see that becomes a bit of a struggle in terms of how they can adopt that type of culture as well. So yeah, I think the promise that the system will just be the answer to everything definitely is one that I would leave behind.
Thanks, Louise. A lot of people are saying about AI as well, right? Okay, any others for stuff that you'd want to put in the bin for 2025?
I think the big piece that I'd like to put in the bin is the old myth of one ring to rule them all that kind of existed within old school platform designing. Lots of people were like, all your tools are going to live in here. The reality of our networks, the reality of the industry that we're in, is that there's a proliferation of tools. And we're seeing a trend towards, how do we get the 6-7 best tools together? How do we create a toolkit that an expert can wield, can leverage? And I think that that's going to out-evolve any single platform design. It's really nice to see vendors leaning into that and saying, how do we partner up? What complements each other are the best, what draws out the best experience for the learner. And I think that leaving behind the, you can buy one platform, do it all there, and thinking more in an ecosystem, thinking in a world where, you know, Spotify and Teams and other worlds like that begin to blur into the L&D space is super important. It allows for better, more dynamic communities in the flow of work. And I think that leaving behind the, this will be your home and this is where you will live, is a good idea.
Tom, could I just piggyback onto what John said for a second?
Yeah.
Which is, I think John is really right. There's a logical fallacy out there that you hear sometimes referred to as the magic button solution. I push the magic button and out comes a great training product. And that just isn't really how learning works. I would say that what we're really talking about here is AI tools and Gen AI tools. And yes, they're fantastic assistants, but they're never going to really solve all the problems with one push of a magic button. So we're much more inclined here to talk about, you know, human-powered learning design, that if humans haven't designed this and been considered in the design of things, you might be going down the wrong path.
Thanks, Damien. Okay, let's move on to the next question. And now we're talking about big predictions for 2026. So the first question I'm going to put out there, and feel free to just chip in, is what would be your bold L&D prediction for next year?
So my bold L&D prediction is that headless thinking around LMSs, LXPs is going to continue to evolve. I think every LMS and LXP that hasn't developed its own headless design, Degreed, Maestro, Cornerstone and their chatbot designs, I think is going to be moving into that space. So my big prediction is that we'll get a proliferation of these headless tools that move us into Teams, move us into Slack, move us into wholly new environments. We've seen some cool technology out there that pretty much ignores all of that ecosystem and creates its own. So you can just ask it a question, it goes and gets it from multiple spaces. I think that will continue to proliferate and that will be really cool. It will be really interesting to see how that affects the deskless workers, how that gets us to mobile and beyond. How do we evolve into a world where I can ask my Jarvis style app a question and it will give me the answers and start coaching me immediately. So that's my big prediction, is that that will accelerate rapidly.
Thanks, John. Any more comments on about bold new L&D predictions for next year?
So I'll jump in here, Tom. My one is what I'm going to call the death of the Netflix for learning model. So over the last few years, we've heard a lot of people talking about LMS and LXP pages being like Netflix for learning. You can have anything you want. You know, here's an ocean of content. I think what we're actually going to see is maybe a move away from the Netflix for learning model towards what I might call the HBO or Apple TV model for learning. So if you think about Netflix, right, and I'm probably going to get in trouble for this, but, you know, thousands and thousands of titles, you start lots of them, you don't finish most of them. And it's not because they're very bad. It's just because they're kind of meh or not particularly brilliant. So we've all had that experience of like that hundreds of shows we've started and you never quite get to the end. You lose interest. It's not quite enough to compel you. And this has been taken so literally, I think, in the industry that certain LXP vendors or LMS vendors have literally made their front pages look like Netflix. Everything looks like a tile or the front of an old VHS or DVD cover. What I think we're going to see is a move towards the HBO model, which is less stuff, but better made. So, you know, an increase in quality in content rather than a quantity of content. Some of the things we've heard this year over 2025 is I'm drowning in content. I don't know where to start. I'm not finishing anything. So clients are saying to us, how can you help us make less stuff and make it better? And then this is where curation also comes in. So curation services are really, really important. There are AI tools evolving which will generate playlists for you in LXPs. And sure, that again, great time saver, great assistant. But you have to step back and ask, who's checking the quality of this? Has anyone asked the question, do we need a 9-hour long playlist of content? When in actual fact, what somebody might need is 15 to 30 minutes of content. So I think maybe it's my trend for 26, I hope that I'm right, is that we're going to see less stuff, better made.
And I'll add to that as well, Damien, because I think my prediction would be, you know, you say that you learn a lot about the future by looking back. And I think certainly we're working with a lot of clients at the moment where they're very much focused on quality over quantity. And given the macro environment that we're in across the world at the moment, they're putting a lot of focus in making sure that their leadership teams have the skills to be able to manage these sometimes challenging times across various organizations. So I still think that leadership will be, as a topic, quite key for 2026 for lots of our global corporate organizations out there. So I would add to that, Damien, too. So the next question then, what trend do we think is totally overhyped for 2026?
I can get this one, Tom, but more from a talent acquisition perspective, I would say. I'm kind of tired of having my LinkedIn feed completely filled with fully autonomous AI recruiters when my job requires a huge amount of human connection. So basically removing the human connection from getting someone a new job, a new role, something that's completely life-changing is, and I'm going to be honest, a little bit laughable to me and very overhyped. It wasn't just 2025. It was, I would say, the past 2 to 3 years, but this year it has been quite amazing, the amount of heads that everyone has been getting about fully autonomous AI recruiters. AI will definitely help, but it's not gonna completely remove the human need from the job.
Thanks, Diogo.
So Tom, I'll jump in and warning, like, rant incoming. Okay, so here we go. So I've been kind of sweating about answering this question because I'm frightened I might sound like a bit of a Grinch or a bit Scroogey. So, like, I'm from the 1970s, but I'm worried this is going to make me sound like I'm from the 1870s. But here we go. Talking avatars. I won't name the companies. I think we all know, we might be able to guess who we're kind of thinking about. There's lots of companies doing this. But the idea that I, as a learner, want to sit in a chair and be lectured at by a AI, uncanny valley, wobbly voiced avatar, not a real person who's going to tell me how I should or shouldn't behave or what my values should or shouldn't be. It just doesn't, like, it does, it makes, I hate it. I can't stand it. This, so if you're going to tell me how I should behave at work, which we need to do because that's part of what learning is, get a real person to do it. Like, don't have a sort of weirdly faced talking bot lecture me on what laws I should follow or how I should treat my colleagues. It feels I'm sitting there thinking, are you so cheap you couldn't actually get a real human being to talk to me? So I think that there's a rise in popularity of these tools because they're, you know, it's a pathway of least resistance. They're easy to do. You can generate content quickly. But I think back to earlier this summer, when Google released their VO3 video tool, and a bunch of new video tools came out, and we all kind of sat in amazement going, wow, this is indistinguishable from reality, and it's going to change the movie industry, and it's going to change how learning works. But very quickly, within about 2 or 3 weeks, in fact, I think, we were all seeing videos on Instagram and TikTok and on the socials where you very quickly were able to say, that's AI, that's not real. And once the initial party trick wow factor kind of wears off, it very quickly becomes quite boring. And that's fine if it's like an entertaining clip of a cat on a unicycle with a trombone on TikTok. But if you're going to sit me in a chair and talk to me about how I should behave at work, I think a learner's tolerance of that will be very, very limited. So that's my totally overhyped thing is talking head avatars.
And I'm going to add to that slightly is that you often hear the phrase uncanny valley, where we are watching something that is very human-like, that's created by AI, but we have an uncomfortable feeling and unease about it because we know it's not genuine. So uncanny valley definitely sits for me, not just in learning, just in everyday, really, in social, in entertainment and so on. I think most recently, and I can't remember exactly the name of the program, but they've just released their first reality show, all created in AI. It was in the news yesterday, in fact, where again, I watched a few minutes just because I was really interested to see what it was, what it would look like. But it did the usual AI stuff where it would just do some really strange things and people would behave really strangely from AI. So yeah, Uncanny Valley, I would say, is up there with AI and everything from an L&D perspective going forward. So really good.
So I think from a marketing perspective, I think, you know, thought leadership without a point of view isn't really leadership. We're getting a lot of content out there that's just regurgitated and predictions of, you know, Gartner or other, you know, research houses, and people are just scrolling past it. And I think differentiation really needs to come from an actual opinion and actual thought leadership based on evidence and a story. So for me, I think that's an important kind of thing that's been overhyped, is just content for content's sake.
Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about tools and tech, what will actually matter in the new year. What learning tech do we think is going to generally make a difference in 2026 going into 27?
I'll throw a thought, Tom, on that. And John touched on this earlier on in one of the earlier questions, which is, I think we're going to see the rise of the chatbot. Now, chatbots aren't new, but if we think about the ethics and compliance or the mandatory learning space, a lot of learning solutions are there to tick a box. They're there to give the business a level of cover and comfort that the learner has been told what they should and shouldn't do. So if a regulator comes knocking, the business can point to, there's the LMS completion record, we're good. That isn't the same as performance. You know, information is not instruction. So if you flip that coin and think about the other side of the coin, so one side being ticking the box, the other side, which I think we're going to move towards, is the moving the needle. So John talked about the chatbots, which can, in real time, and maybe we're going to see this in a Teams and Slack environment, can go interrogate the SharePoint, go interrogate the Google Drive, and crucially, go interrogate the LMS, as in scrape the SCO, scrape the video to the exact time code of the video, and return an answer to me for a very specific query in real time. That's game changing. So the classic example is, you know, I might work in a financial institution and I do my know your customer training. 3 to 4 months later, I'm not going to go back into the LMS to try and find the answer to the question when a guy walks into the bank with a suitcase of 10 grand of sweaty money. I'm not going to do that. But what I might do is use my chatbot in the corner of my screen to say, what do I do when someone comes in with a suitcase of 10 grand? And that chatbot can go and scrape the SCO, the video, the SharePoint, the policy document, whatever you point it at in real time and give me an answer in that moment. These tools aren't new, they've been around a while, but their sophistication is increasing dramatically. And we've seen some kind of amazing tech emerging in the last few months that shows us that 2026 might be genuinely the year of the rise of the chatbot.
So I'd build on that. I think that it's, Damien mentioned there, the actual use case, that use case coming back into the world of L&D and finding the solution to the use case. I think that's going to be more and more prevalent. There's going to be this situation where people are saying, I need an answer. I'd go a step further than it being the bot or the AI giving the information. Actually, I see a world in which it would take you to the expert, to the SME, to the, you know, the guardian of that within your organization. So actually, it would say, here's your answer for now. This is what you should do. But actually, go talk to Diogo. He's an expert on talent. If that's what you're trying to acquire, go talk to him. Or go talk to Tom. He's done this. He's worn the hat. He's been in this many organizations. He's the subject matter expert for that organization. And actually, is partly the curator and controller conductor of that content that's going into that environment. That's going to become more and more aligned. And I think we'll get to the stage that businesses are starting to say, what are my 10 use cases? What's the toolkit that solves that? And what's the information that needs to sit in the middle of that to be disseminated in this correct way to give us really rapid response? So yeah, really looking forward to that as an evolution.
Okay, 2026 is going to be a good year. Any more thoughts around tools and tech for 2026 that'll make a difference?
So the other big thought I have, sorry to grab the mic again, is I'm intrigued by what we can't see. There are big organizations like Microsoft who have big investments that they've made over the years in things like Viva that have gone suddenly quiet as they pivot into their Copilot type environments. I wonder what's happening in Google, in Microsoft, in Amazon. What discussions are they having with themselves about how they leverage these tools that they've used to dominate the market? How do they bring them into the space? How do they take more control, more governance? And will there be a complete pivot? I think that's the big question for me is, will there be a sudden and extreme pivot away from the traditional existing ecosystems? And what will that look like? What's going on in the R&D departments is what's both keeping me awake at night and intriguing me. I'd really like to lift the hood on that if we could.
Okay, thanks, John. What will learners need most in 2026? We've touched on it in fact that I think I mentioned leadership. We talked about other ways in which organizations may lean into certain things. But what skills do we think will be most important for organizations next year?
So Tom, I'd suggest prompt engineering, the ability to write really good prompts for LLMs that counter the tendency towards hallucination, that require citation of sources, understanding. So for example, if I'm trying to generate a quick course outline for a course on, I don't know, cybersecurity, asking an LLM for, give me a course outline. Yeah, it'll give you something, but it'll throw the kitchen sink at you. What instead, a better prompt would be, give me a 3-word message hook that the learner can take away with them. Give me spaced repetition. Give me scenarios based on real world case studies, which you can find in the news. So I think prompt engineering and complexity of prompt engineering is like a critical skill for anybody in 2026 in L&D.
I would completely agree with that, Damien, as well. But then on the flip side of that, I would say that there's that, as AI automates more tasks, that the value of that human capability will improve, and becoming more strategic differentiators with things like creative problem solving, you know, relationship building, negotiation, coaching. So moving away from the more operational tasks to more actually strategic differentiators.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think also from a technical perspective, an awareness of how to troubleshoot when these things go wrong, because as we move to more and more automated processes or AI supported processes, I think the ability to understand when that does fall down, how you rectify that and, you know, join the dots up. So that is, again, kind of bringing that human part. I know there's a lot of fear sometimes about, you know, the robots are going to take our jobs and everyone's going to be redundant. But I think you always need the ability to, one, train the robot with the right information in the first place. But then secondly, know how to fix that if something does fall off the table.
I think that's huge, Louise. How to train your digital colleague, your digital coach, your maestro, your thing that's taking you into your environment, how to train it and have the grit to hang on and train it properly rather than accept it as its first iteration or its second iteration. I think that's going to be a massive skill. So curiosity and the grit to continuously explore these tools to make them work for your environment is going to be a huge skill set. It's going to be very important.
Yeah, absolutely. Curiosity. I think it's the ability to challenge and ask questions and not just take, you know, what the computer says as written. Because, you know, there will be times where things won't be correct. And I think having the ability to, one, be able to see that, and then two, be able to then unpick that to justify that to the business is a big piece. Because as we become more reliant on this tech, it's going to become difficult because everyone will say, oh, well, that's what the system says. But that doesn't mean that that's always true. If there's something that's fallen down in the process along the way, it's having that ability to question that and look at that rather than just, you know, taking that as gospel.
It's like the old chat forums where you're saying to somebody who sounds authoritative, sounds clear, sounds compelling, you're saying, can you just tell me your sources so I can understand and investigate those myself, make my own decisions about whether or not that's exactly what I needed, exactly what I was looking for, or whether it's got a deep bias in it that's getting in the way. I think that will continue to emerge in this space, and will be, if it doesn't, it will become a problem because, it, as Damien alluded to, they'll start to hallucinate.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's the ability to question that and then know how to test that properly as well. So when you are going through new processes and new solutions, how do you break it? You know, what kind of back to Damien's point about how to write correct prompts, how to also write incorrect prompts to make sure that if you are, you know, tricking the system, so to speak, that it understands and then can still give you the right answer. And it's not just going to, you know, tell you what you want to hear, which I think is the difficulty that we have sometimes.
I think that digital team member piece is really key, right? We sit in rooms with experts all the time, big groups of people that we respect, we understand, we believe in, but we still interrogate the answers they give. We still ask those questions. I think having that as a natural reflex for anything AI that's leading in and accelerating us is going to be super important, super valuable. So yeah, and we're seeing more and more of it, right? We're seeing more and more of people saying, when I did this for the first time with this tool, I got an okay result, but I couldn't publish it to my audience. When I did it the fifth time and I really thought about it and I really leaned into making it cooperate, I got much better results. So it's worth that investment of energy and time. I think that the illusion of speed could become a hurdle to quality. And I think that if we do it properly, we can have both. And that's the key.
Okay, we're into the final round. And this is your L&D Christmas wish list. So the first question is, what's the one thing you wish every organization would invest in for learning next year?
So Tom, I'll get my Grinch hat back on. I'd love to see more organizations invest in content strategy, specifically learning needs analysis. So we had a conversation last week with a client of ours, and the conversation was around, why is this learning product being made? Not one in particular, but like a lot of them they'd been seeing landing on their desk. And so what we still see happening is the business comes to an L&D department and says, I want e-learning. And the L&D person is thinking, this isn't e-learning. This is a PDF. Maybe this is an email. Maybe this is a 10-minute conversation. Maybe this is a podcast. But businesses, particularly the larger ones, are so wedded to the traditional model of ticking the box with an e-learning SCO that they're so comforted by the digital record of completion that they're not pausing to ask if they should be spending a five-figure sum on an e-learning courseware, when in fact, maybe the need could be taken care of with something much simpler and much more low tech. And that's really a failure of learning needs analysis, that when that guy or girl walks in and says, give me an e-learning course, somebody should be saying, hang on a second, what are you actually trying to do here? Does this need a completion record? Does it need a 10-question multiple choice quiz? So I'd say, in the interest of the sanity of learners and also the bottom line, and you know, not spending money on things you shouldn't be spending on, I'd say content strategy and learning needs analysis.
I couldn't agree more, Damien. I think just expanding on that, when we talk about the governance side of things, I think for me, one of the big pieces that I think a lot of organisations would benefit from is that overall landscape review. So not only content strategy, that being one part of that, but the overall governance around what they're doing from a learning perspective, both platform and content wise. Because the amount of clients that we start working with and then we uncover, it's like you turn over a rock and then there's suddenly another four mini teams that are doing their own thing off in silo. And I think that is something that has a danger of getting worse as we move more to sort of the user-generated content type approach as well. So I think that governance piece is a really big one, not only from what content they're making so that we haven't got duplication or, you know, a conflict of interest in terms of one team is saying one thing, another team saying something else, but also from a platform perspective, where are they putting that? How are they structuring that? All of those things that become a bit of a headache because it's then confusing. And, you know, for an example, if you want to migrate to a new system, it becomes a headache because you're then trying to, you know, scrape things from every corner of the business. So I think having that overarching person or piece or team that is the orchestrator of that is a really key thing that a lot of organizations are missing out on.
I would completely echo that as well. Louise, I think, aligning business strategy to commercial strategy is really important. You know, from a marketing perspective, we're campaigning now for next year to companies to sort of think about doing a learning landscape and think about, you know, just, you know, stopping for a minute and kind of auditing and understanding where they're at, what they're doing, what their objectives are, and aligning back to the business strategy. Because obviously when L&D is tied to the business outcomes, it becomes more of a profit lever than a cost center. And I think that's something that, you know, we obviously are real advocates that jump on it, because, you know, we just do the doing every day and we don't stop and think about, right, is this still aligned to where our strategy is?
The big piece, the one thing I would really love to see is people going, how do I bring this to life? We deal with loads and loads of people who've got great SharePoints, excellent PDFs, really nicely detailed infographics. But ultimately, if you're not going to read that, if you're not a person who naturally wants to read, what I really like to see are the tools that can bring those things to life rapidly, that can turn them into a 15-minute walkthrough explanation. I'd love to see that happening more and more. I think that the ability to click on something and say, okay, I don't have time to digest the document. Digest it for me. Tell me the five salient points. Bring those to me immediately. I think that there's so many toolkits out there that will do that now. There is no real excuse for you sending me a dry PDF or logging something into your SharePoint that is a 15-page document. Really, they can have an attachment to them that allows them to be unpacked. And if they aren't being unpacked by your learners, it tells you one thing. You don't need them. They don't need to be there. If they're there for compliance only, sure. If you're covering yourself for an audit, great. But actually, if I need to sit down and digest that, then I know I don't have that kind of time. So actually give me that option, that one click that will give me the short audio that tells me what it's for so I can identify quickly whether I need to consume the whole document or whether I'm looking in the wrong place. That's what I'd love to have in my Christmas stocking.
Thanks, John. What's your personal L&D or stroke career New Year's resolution for 2026?
I think my resolution is become the expert that understands that the other experts add the value. Become the expert that can see the A team that needs to solve that problem. Become the expert that understands that tooling well enough to know what's hype and what's not. And be dedicated to saying that's not ready yet, or be dedicated to saying you should try this now, because otherwise people will not be able to make those judgment calls. I think it's that having an opinion piece, right? If you don't have an opinion, if you say everything's great, then you live in a world where there's too many tools for you to ever explore. I'm going to pick five and add them to the toolkits of myself, my teams and my clients' teams, and really, really push them through that phase of experimentation, that R&D phase, to get them to really adding value. And if they don't do that within a certain time frame, I'm going to be more heartless. I'm going to say that doesn't work for us. We're going to drop that tool. We're going to use something else. So be more decisive on what works and what doesn't is my New Year's resolution.
Thanks, John. I'll go where you guys are thinking. I think for me, it's challenged the norm. I think in our industry, like many industries, but certainly in L&D, we do tend to stick to what we know and the comfort zone of how we do things in organizations for corporate learning. And we need to learn to be brave and pivot and open our arms to other ideas and options. I've always been a big advocate of doing learning that is bite-sized, it's topical, it's relevant, and sometimes it's throwaway, but it hits the user when they need it at the right time. And I think sometimes we do go back into the space of maybe overcooking it and providing too much information for people where their time is very limited and their engagement is probably limited too. So yeah, it's how do we pivot and use all of the technologies out there, including the joys of AI, to bring that to the market. So certainly how we pivot and how we kind of bring the most to our clients going forward. So that's my New Year's resolution for 2026. Anyone else got any other thoughts?
Yeah, Tom, I've got one, which is to listen to more contrary views, people who disagree with me. So if I could share a story for a second, about, I don't know, 2007, 2008, I went to online learning conference in Berlin, and around about that time, you know, YouTube was still new, right? So I know this sounds like ancient history for our younger audience members, but YouTube and the internet was still relatively new. And a guy stood up at that conference and he said, he was profoundly worried about what was happening online because he saw what he called the death of the expert. That if there's no gatekeeper and everybody has a microphone and everybody has a blog page or a YouTube channel, then the world is going to get filled with misinformation and noise. And at the time, you know, I was young and probably arrogant, and I was one of many people in that audience who were really angry with him. You know, he was almost booed off. He was kind of seen as a bit of a Luddite and, oh, you know, get with it, granddad, and welcome to the new world and all this. Looking back at that from 2025, that gentleman might have had a point. But at the time, I was just a bit, you know, in need of seasoning and kind of dismissed what he was saying. So my New Year's resolution will be to take a pause when I hear somebody say something that I totally disagree with about learning, about tech, about the learning landscape, and ask myself why it's rankling with me, why it might be irritating me, and actually just slow down and say, maybe this person has something to say and I'm just not comfortable with it because it doesn't fit with my worldview. So yeah, more time listening to contrarians.
Thanks, Damien. Anything from anyone else?
Yeah, I think similar to yourself, Tom, it's to continue looking at where we can help fill the gaps. So as, you know, technology and learning emerges, I think one of the things that I'm keen to explore, not really a resolution, but more of a, you know, a goal, I suppose, is to see where we can help enhance the gaps in the current products so that we can, you know, fix the wish lists of the clients that we have.
Thanks, Louise.
I think similar to John, I would like to move away from being more of a doer into more of having a consultant role within the talent space. So rather than asking what the job description for a particular role is, maybe I should be asking more in 2026 about what is the problem you're trying to solve with this hire to our clients. So helping them a little bit more in understanding what the hiring needs are, rather than just asking what is this role that you have? What person do you need? Maybe it's not about the person, maybe it's about a team as a whole, the project as a whole, just trying to understand a little bit more of that, acting as a consultant and not just as someone that sends out CVs, I guess.
Thanks, everyone. Time is against us, so we'll need to quickly move on. So we're going to wrap up now this festive episode of L&D Uncovered. Thank you very much for listening. But before we go, we're going to ask the panel one quick question, but it's not really L&D related. It's what do they love most about the festive season? So I'm going to go around. I'm going to put everybody on the spot and just say what they like most about the festive season for the end of the year 2025. So quickly, I'm going to go in order. Damien, you first.
Putting up the Christmas tree. Nothing in the entire 12 months of the year makes me happier than putting up the Christmas tree. We just did it over the weekend and it's brilliant. It turns me back into a 10-year-old. So I love that.
Great. Thanks, Damien. I hope Elf was playing in the background as well. Diogo, I'm going to come to you next. Diogo, you're from Portugal. Do you miss anything from Portugal from a festive perspective?
Yeah, I think, and my answer would start with that being from Portugal. So being in London, the UK is not my native country, obviously. So the Christmas season is the time where I go back, see friends and family. And I think that's what excites me the most. Not a huge fan of Christmas trees, but I am a huge fan of my family and some of my friends. So it's always nice to go back there for a couple of weeks, see old faces and new faces and just enjoy everyone.
Thanks, Diogo, and safe travels when you do. Moving on then, Louise.
Thanks, Tom. So I'm a December baby, first of all. So yeah, Christmas is me through and through. And I think similar to Damien, it's kind of the nostalgia part. So all of the little traditions or, you know, when you get the decorations out and you have all of those little memories and things like that. And especially having children now, getting to be Santa. So carrying on all of those memories and traditions is definitely a key thing for me.
Thanks, Louise. All about the children, right? And John, on to you.
Christmas for me is about people. And I work in a role that gets me in touch with hundreds of them, which is great. But Christmas is a time to really think about who you want to spend that time with. And that's thematic throughout all of my networking activities throughout the year. But actually, Christmas really boils it down to, I have a couple of days. I want to get all the people that I love or I like spending time with into that space. And doing that, networking like that is the bit that makes Christmas or festivities of any kind really, really appeal to me. It's that opportunity to really take stock of the year, think about the people that you want to associate with, and then set out into the next year with that in mind.
Okay, thanks, John. Beth?
Christmas is my favourite time of year, even over summer, apart from obviously the cold. I love the lights. I love it when the lights go up in town. I love putting the Christmas tree up. But I think my favourite thing is probably seeing my children's faces on Christmas morning. And I think, yeah, that's definitely my highlight.
Great. So that was episode 3 of L&D Uncovered. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks so much to our expert Jampan panel. And we'll see you in the new year for all things 2026. Take care. We'll see you next year.